This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The first element of this strategy was to undermine the political opposition, particularly the CNL, which rapidly became the main rival of the ruling party. Everything was done to reduce its chances of winning the various elections.
That's Dudu Dini, chairman of the UN's Commission of Inquiry on Burundi, its report accusing officials and the ruling party of implementing a strategy based on violence and tilts election results in their favor. Details coming up. Also, concerns are growing in Nigeria about food shortages due to insecurity, flooding, and other causes. And the World Food Program says northern Mozambique faces an urgent humanitarian crisis. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. 5 years after Europe's migrant crisis, the European Union is unveiling a long-awaited migration plan today that stresses mandatory burden sharing, but also sending illegal migrants back to their home countries. For VOA, Lisa Bryant reports from Paris on the proposals.
The new so-called Migration and Asylum Pact is the latest effort by the EU's executive arm to create a comprehensive plan for managing migration and to get all 27 member states behind it. Backed by Germany, the bloc's most powerful member, and the EU's current rotating president, it includes mandatory rules for sharing the migration burden, whether that means hosting asylum seekers or sponsoring returns of failed applicants. It also aims to strengthen control of Europe's external borders, with new plans to screen all migrants and fast-track those unlikely to get asylum, crack down on human trafficking, and increase support for countries of origin and transit to give people reasons to stay home. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said the plan strikes a fair balance between responsibility and solidarity.
It is not a question whether member states should support with solidarity and contributions, but how they should support.
The Commission's plan needs to be approved by the 27 member states, and some European leaders were sounding concerns before its details were even announced. Migration is a deeply divisive issue in the EU. Countries on the front lines of the migrant influx, like Greece, Spain, and Italy, want more burden sharing and other support. Others, like Hungary and Austria, object to taking in new migrants. Backdropping the Commission's pact was the recent fire in Europe's largest migrant camp on the Greek island of Lesbos. While Germany has agreed to welcome in more than 1,500 of the migrants, other countries are taking in far fewer or none. Marie de Sommer heads the migration program at the Brussels-based European Policy Center Research Group.
The fire in Lesbos, which was horrible, but one thing that it did do is to also, with the wider public, showcase the urgency and the importance of coming to a European solution.
Even though Europe's migration influx has dropped sizably from the million-plus arrivals in 2015 to just 140,000 last year, seven European countries, including EU members Hungary and Croatia, top a new Gallup poll as the world's least accepting country for migrants. Analyst Stefan Lina of Carnegie Europe says migration promises to be a long-standing issue for Europe.
The question is how it is handled, how one can replace illegal migration, just getting into boats and trying to cross the Mediterranean by more legal forms of migration. I think this is probably one of the biggest challenges Europe will face in the next 20, 30 years. There is no silver bullet.
The European Commission says it will unveil proposals on legal migration next year, as well as on Europe's open border Schengen system. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The UN's Commission of Inquiry on Burundi accuses the ruling party and Burundian authorities of implementing a strategy based on violence that tilts election results in their favor. The commission has just submitted its final report to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This is the fourth and final year that the human rights situation in Burundi has been under the investigative lens of the Commission of Inquiry. The commission says there has been no reduction in widespread systematic human rights violations in the country over this period. Hopes that conditions would improve under the new government of Evariste and Ndayishimiye, it adds, have been dashed. The report finds the electoral process, which concluded on August 24th, was not marred by mass violence. However, it says serious human rights violations, some of which may constitute crimes under international law, have been committed. The report documents cases of summary executions, arbitrary arrests, torture, and sexual violence. Commission Chair Dudu Dien notes these violations did not occur by chance. He says the ruling party and Burundian authorities have implemented a strategy based on violence and human rights violations in order to ensure they win all elections. He speaks through an interpreter.
The first element of this strategy was to undermine the political opposition, particularly the CNL, which rapidly became the main rival of the ruling party. Everything was done to reduce its chances of winning the various elections.
During the pre-electoral period, Dien says a number of CNL members were arrested and arbitrarily detained. Some were tortured and fell victim of ill treatment. Some were killed. He speaks through an interpreter.
One of the characteristics of the elections was an increase in hate speech and attacks on the opposition, particularly by members of the CNDD and local authorities. But there were also hate speech was made with an ethnic dimension. This is tolerated by the government.
Burundi's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Renova Tabu, calls the commission's report insulting and defamatory. He says the commission has violated provisions of the UN Charter and other human rights standards and cannot be entrusted with the task of judging others. He says his country has made great progress since 2015 in promoting and protecting human rights and deserves to be removed from the council agenda. He says the council should end the commission's mandate to monitor conditions in Burundi. The commission disagrees. The three-member panel urges the international community to continue following the development of the human rights situation in Burundi and to ensure that perpetrators of crimes in that country are brought to justice. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Africa, the country on the continent's hardest hit by COVID-19, recently scrapped many of the strict regulations aimed at preventing infections. It's now at level one of what is the world's longest coronavirus lockdown, and life is easing back to normal. But many in the medical field are concerned that this will cause a resurgence of infections and deaths. Darren Taylor reports.
The highways are again teeming with traffic and the malls are packed with people. If it wasn't for the mouths and noses covered with masks and the security guards dispensing hand sanitizer at store entrances, it would be easy to forget that South Africa is still very much a part of one of the greatest health crises ever. State statistics say COVID-19 has so far claimed the lives of more than 16,000 people and infected almost 700,000. Other experts say these figures are much, much higher. The government's chief advisor on the coronavirus, Professor Salim Abdul Karim, is confident that South Africa can avoid a second wave of COVID-19 despite the recent lifting of restrictions.
The overall strategy we are going with now has a much more open-ended approach to testing, including all inpatients. So we'll get a better idea as an early warning system for whether a second surge is emerging.
Up until now, a shortage of kits to test for COVID-19 meant that only people with symptoms could be tested. But because of declining infections, says Karim, there are now enough kits to test those who've merely had contact with someone with coronavirus. The epidemiologist hopes this will allow his teams to detect any upsurge in infections, in which case South Africa will return to tighter lockdown restrictions. Karim urges citizens not to become complacent and to embrace the new normal.
We've got to continue with our prevention strategies, and the three key ones being social distancing, masks, and hand hygiene. If we are to compromise on our social distancing and our masks in a school situation, we may end up seeing small outbreaks occur. And right now, we've actually got a very contained situation. We're not seeing any major outbreaks in our schools. And so that's a very good sign.
Something that's concerning parents is a recent government notification about a new pediatric condition called multisystem inflammatory syndrome. MIS, as it's known, has affected some children who got COVID-19 or were in contact with someone who had it in various parts of the world. It causes different body parts to become inflamed, including the heart, lungs, kidneys, brain, skin, and eyes. Children with MIS may have symptoms such as fever, stomach pain, a rash, and tiredness. In rare cases, it can cause death, says Karim.
The one challenge is that often children with MIS are not positive on a coronavirus PCR test. So you have to actually do an antibody test, because this occurs several days after acute infection. So it is a more complicated condition to diagnose in relation to COVID. And so this notification is a key step to enable us to get a better understanding of how common this is and whether it's increasing or not.
Karim appeals to parents not to panic about MIS.
Our colleagues in the pediatric field have been seeing only occasional cases. So I haven't yet got a sense of has it really gone up or not, because we don't really have that data yet.
For now, says the scientist, it's safe for children to go to school if they continue to wear masks, wash hands, and maintain social distancing. However, Karim doesn't foresee a return of mass gatherings, such as sports events attended by spectators, anytime soon. These, he says, are super spreaders, which have sparked significant spikes in infections and deaths elsewhere. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, one of the country's largest trade groups, held a protest at two Zimbabwe diplomatic missions today to demand an end to human rights abuses in the neighboring country. It's the first protest by South African citizens since delegations sent by President Cyril Ramaphosa and the ruling African National Congress went to Zimbabwe and met with ruling party officials, but not with other stakeholders in the crisis. Tuso Kobalo reports from Pretoria.
Addressing the protest in Pretoria, Metal Workers Union President Andrew Chirwa described the ZANU-PF-led government as a dictatorship and a violent regime.
What you're dealing with in Zimbabwe is practically the failure of post-liberation politics. When those that are entrusted by the people to take the aspiration of the people forward, they fail to do that. When the economy fails, what they do is what you see in Zimbabwe. Dictatorship, they'll be clamping down on dissent, on any form of dissent. People will be oppressed, and that's what we have witnessed everywhere.
He also expressed disappointment with the South African government, the Southern African Development Community, and the African Union, saying their leaders have failed to resolve the problem in Zimbabwe because they have similar ambitions of oppressing their citizens. Mtulisi Hanana, convener at the African People Solidarity Network, warned the Zimbabwean government not to force its people to resort to the same violence being unleashed on them. We have a state that has turned rogue, that is killing and abducting its citizens. We have a state that does not want to engage its citizens. It descends on them with brutality and with violence. And as I stand here, I'm a victim of that violence because the state broke into my home looking for me, threatened my wife, pointed guns at my infant children, all under the age of two. So you can tell that we have a serious crisis.
Protesters delivered a list of demands to the embassy. They want the African Union to investigate and foster prosecution of those behind the rights abuses in Zimbabwe. They are pushing for the arrest of President Emmerson Mnangagwa for allegedly sanctioning state brutality on citizens. They also want the release of detained political activists and an end to harassment of journalists. Unlike in previous protests involving Zimbabweans, an embassy official identified only as Mr. Shumba came out to receive the memorandum of demands.
The memorandum, we are going to go through it, see where it's supposed to go. Then we will deliver it where it's supposed to go. The embassy will send the memorandum to the government of Zimbabwe.
Many South Africans are upset that South African delegations returned from Zimbabwe without meeting with opposition parties and civil society organizations. The ANC has insisted its delegation will return to engage other parties, but no date has been set and is unclear if President Mnangagwa will allow it to speak to the opposition. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Concerns are growing in Nigeria about possible food shortages due to insecurity, flooding, border closures, and a ban on using foreign exchange for food imports. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
President Muhammadu Buhari has directed the central bank not to give foreign exchange for imports of food items or fertilizer. Speaking at a meeting of the National Food Security Council, Buhari said private businesses bent on food importation should source their foreign exchange independently. Some farmers and agricultural experts have been reacting to the directive against the backdrop of growing food shortages in the country. Prior to the directive, the central bank had stopped issuing foreign exchange for the importation of some food items in 2015. The affected foods include staples like rice, margarine, food oils, meats, vegetables, eggs, and thinned fish. Bolama Mohammed is a farmer based in Maiduguri, northeast Nigeria. He says the presidential directive is good and will encourage Nigerians to patronize homegrown food.
Once foreign imported food stop coming into the country, our people will be left with no other choice but to start patronizing our homegrown food. And this will go a long way in encouraging our farmers to go into farming. And this will also increase Nigeria's food production.
Mohammed says many farmers in the northeast have been displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency. He urged the government to help them restart farming.
Most of the farmers that were once farming in the local government areas have now been displaced by the conflict. Most of them have been driven out of their farm, and most of them are now living in the internally displaced persons camp in Maiduguri, the Borno State capital. So the way out is for the government to only do something so that they can be able to go back to their communities and be able to engage in farming.
Mohammed says flooding, border closures, and attacks by herders in other parts of the country could affect food production and cause shortages. He urged the government to provide assistance to farmers affected by the flooding and ensure security to increase local food production. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
The World Food Program says northern Mozambique faces an urgent humanitarian crisis with an escalating extremism insurgency displacing close to 310,000 people. The rebels have stepped up their attacks in northern Cabo Delgado province, seizing the strategic port of Mokimbao, Diparia, which they have held for 6 weeks. Clashes between the rebels, who are aligned with the Islamic State group, and government forces have caused local residents to flee their homes and fields. More than 1,500 people have been killed since the conflict started in 2017. Antonella Di April, the World Food Programme representative for Mozambique, says growing insecurity and poor infrastructure have made it harder to reach out to people, and the COVID-19 pandemic has made the crisis even more complex. The WFP warns that the threat of hunger is growing in the area as entire communities have lost access to food and income. Women's groups in the Gambia took to the streets this week to protest the country's surge in maternal mortality cases in recent years, complicated by the COVID-19 pandemic. Panderambai reports for VOA from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Is it time to stop?
Yeah.
We are angry.
Yeah.
Women are dying, which should not happen. Women are our mothers, our sisters, our friends. This should not happen. If we lost our women, who is going to vote for these politicians?
The protesters say they are running out of patience. They want the government to mobilize more resources to safeguard the lives of pregnant women. Sally Job was among the organizers of the protest march.
Why should a human being, woman, die from giving life? Why? There are so many factors that could be reversed. Why do we have a health care system in the Gambia if it will not save women? What have we voted for? Why do we need leaders in our countries?
Official records show that out of 100,000 pregnant women, 597 died in 2017 because of health-related complications during delivery. That was nearly triple the global average of 211 per 100,000, which has been dropping since 1990, and skeptics believe that the Gambia's real figure is higher. No statistics are available since the COVID-19 pandemic began earlier this year, but many countries have reported significant increases. Infant mortality rates also are high in the Gambia. Sally Job again.
This has to stop. Gambian women are tired, our life matters, and we want to make sure this reoccurrence of maternal mortality should stop. We know nature has its course. People will die every day regardless, but it should not be a norm. It should not be a lifestyle, like a vibe, like something that is normal.
Just a few weeks ago, the death of a woman after giving birth to twins sparked a national outcry. This led to Gambian women taking to Facebook, promoting a campaign to save women's lives. Manyi Mabojang also spoke during this protest march.
It is an open secret that the young expected mothers in recent weeks and months continue losing their lives in the Gambia during pregnancy and childbirth, whilst many others suffered lifetime maternal associated health complications. This plus many other reasons prompted the formation of the Gambia Women's Life Matters movement to call on the attention of the government, but most importantly, the Ministry of Health and Social Welfare of the Gambia.
First Lady Fatoumata Babbaro, in a recent statement, says no woman should die while giving life. She called for more reproductive health care sensitization, noting that access to health care should be a woman's right. For VOA News, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.